You may know that before he was a soldier and the country's first president, George Washington was a surveyor, measuring and mapping parcels of land for settlers and speculators on Virginia's western frontier. So drawing and studying maps was second nature to Washington when he served as an officer in the French and Indian War. And maps also played a crucial role as he led the Continental Army during the Revolution. And when he was president, he used them to deal with the diplomatic challenges he faced, trying to hold his young republic together. In fact, if you think about it, maps can be used to tell George Washington's life story, which our next guest, historian Barnett Schechter, has done in a new, beautiful, just-in-time-for-the-holidays coffee-table-sized book. It's called George Washington's America, A Biography Through His Maps, and Barnett joins us from the NPR studios in New York to talk about it. Barnett, Washington collected these maps. He drew some himself. His family eventually collected all of them in an atlas that's now at the library at Yale University. And listeners can see some of them at herenow.org. But tell us, why did George Washington so look at the world through geography?
Well, he talks about maps quite frequently in his papers and letters. And as you mentioned, his first career when he was 16 was as a surveyor. He got in the habit of scouting out choice parcels of land and looking for waterways and high ground, both with a military eye and the eye of a young man trying to rise into the ranks of Virginia's gentry.
Right at the outset, right in your introduction to the book, in George Washington's words, we heard the story that he recorded in his diary about meeting an old Indian who spoke about a fine piece of land, a beautiful place for a house, and in order to give me a more lively idea of it, chalked out the situation upon his deerskin. You know, maps were gold in those days. They were a form of communication.
Exactly. Not only communication, but a currency, even. And Washington traded on that. He gained a lot of knowledge about the Ohio country and the western frontier through his first military expedition for the Virginia governor, which was in the winter of 1753-54, when Washington was just 21 years old. He successfully went and carried a message to the French governor there and challenged them to move off of British land. And he drew a map, which he gave to the governor and which was included with his diary when it was sent to the Board of Trade in England to warn them that the French threat was very real. And this map, his map of the frontier, is actually quite accurate, even though you can see there's certain conventions that he used, some distortions.
Well, I'm looking at the Potomac River, for instance, and it ribbons along, and then it's like ribbon candy, you know,
right,
back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth in these, you know, loops, if you can picture Christmas ribbon candy.
What's wonderful is to combine Washington's words with these pictures, and you can see him talking about a particular creek or river and how frustrating it was because it meandered so much and took so long to travel its length. It really, I think, maps become a kind of a whole new window on the man and his personality and his ambition and ultimately his transformation from a very ambitious, young, acquisitive man who wanted to, for example, collect as much land as he could, own as much land as he could over the mountains in the Ohio country. And then his lifelong passion, really, his fixation was to try to connect the trade that would come from the Great Lakes and the Mississippi region via the Potomac River to the Virginia seaboard and the Atlantic. Of course, it never came to pass. The mountains were too great a barrier. But what's interesting to see is how by the end of the Revolution in 1783, he begins to look more broadly with the eyes of a statesman. He suddenly sees that the waterways of the country are really this great asset that is going to save the country politically, with Britain in the north and Spain to the southwest and the French clamoring for an alliance, that the forces that are trying to pull the country apart can best be countered by developing these rivers as commercial arteries that will create a bond of mutual interest between the western settlers, the immigrants who are moving out toward the Mississippi, and the easterners. So he really begins to see the political scope in this geographical picture.
Yeah. Well, it's just so much fun. I'm paging through as we're talking, and it's so much fun to look at them because they take you back to your, you know, childhood school books, or maybe going to Fort Ticonderoga in upstate New York, you know, and
right,
and looking at some of these old pieces, and when you think of him looking at them. But how about maps in the time of war? One of our favorites is entitled The Seat of War in New England. It's just phenomenal. You see all these little depictions of little citizen soldiers, and they look like they're in little, I don't know what, wagons or something, making their way towards different places where the revolution happened. Where did this map come from?
Well, if you look at the cartouche, it says that this is a map drawn by an American volunteer. And it's a great dramatic depiction of the opening phases of the American Revolution. It's this wonderful combination, as you point out, of cartography superimposed on it, these pictorial elements, which really dramatize the story. Actually, they're all moving toward the same place. They're all headed for Cambridge to bottle up the British in Boston.
Yeah, to Cambridge, Massachusetts, to the Cambridge Common there.
Yeah, and in fact, one of those columns that you see coming in from the middle of the left side of the map, if you look very carefully below it, it says the March of General Washington.
Right. So the incredible detail in this map, and then other maps, just remind us of what a new country this was. One of them might say, these parts are entirely unknown, I-N-T-I-R-E-L-Y, because they were.
I have to tell you, one of the most amazing experiences I had was going up to Yale and opening up these very large maps that are folded in three or four and opening them up and feeling almost as if suddenly I was breathing the same air as George Washington.
Sure.
And looking at these and really looking over his shoulder, it really was a kind of moment of time travel where I went back and almost imagined myself in Washington's head with all these limitations. There was a real sense of irony that I could look upon this globe that we know so much better now and to realize that he was circumscribed by the bounds of European knowledge of these areas.
Well, and he uses his map skills right up to the end of his life, drawing up his last will and testament.
There's a wonderful sense that he's returning to his beginnings as a young surveyor, because when he goes to divide Mount Vernon between three heirs, he has to tell them where the lines of division are going to be, and he starts to pick out certain boulders or certain old trees that are there.
Here's what he writes. He had no children, so these were nephews, and he writes about the land he's going to leave to his nephew Bushrod. Beginning at the ford of Dogue Run near my mill, extending along the road and bounded thereby as it now goes, and ever has gone since my recollection of it, to the ford of Little Hunting Creek at the Gum Spring, until it comes to a knoll opposite to an old road which formerly passed through the lower field of Muddy Hole Farm. He's a man who knew every inch of his earth.
That's very well said. I mean, one of the things that I discovered in writing this book is that to really get to know him, you really need to understand his deep and abiding connection to the land, to the whole physical terrain of North America. That really is a key to his development as an individual, as a visionary statesman. And another aspect of that, of course, is that in this map of Mount Vernon that he himself surveyed, we can also see the story of his evolution from slaveholder to liberator. By the end of his life, had become so disgusted with the institution of slavery that he made plans to try to free his slaves and then rent out pieces of Mount Vernon and hire farmers who could work the land and then hire his former slaves as free sharecroppers. He didn't succeed in doing that, but he did free his slaves in his will. And so he certainly traveled a very significant arc in his life in that respect.
That's Barnett Schechter talking about George Washington. Barnett's new beautiful coffee table size book is George Washington's America, A Biography Through His Maps. And again, you can see some of the maps at hereandnow.org. But Barnett, thanks so much for speaking to us about it.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us again here and now.